Knives, machetes, saws, and shears. Multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com.
And what's really important is that we band together, we speak with one voice.
And I was like, you sure? Because I've got two kids, I don't want it to ruin your hunt. He's like, yeah, just coming home with me.
Just take your time. Like I said, it would have killed a normal man, but I'm not normal, but, you know.
When you said, why do you want to talk about that? To me, it was kind of like, oh my gosh, there's so many different factors that go into this decision.
Enjoy it for what it is. Every moment of it. If you're only going to shoot one duck.
Welcome to the Fowl Front Podcast, part of the Waypoint Outdoor Collective.
Hey, Fowl Front, it's Hannah from Oak Barn Beef. We're giving away a box of steaks, jerky, and more premium beef exclusively for the listeners of the Fowl Front. To sign up, head over to fowlfront.com and click on the Oak Barn Beef giveaway tab to enter into this giveaway. Thanks, and we can't wait for you to try our Nebraska-raised and dry-aged premium beef.
We're back. The Fowl Front Waterfowl Podcast is back, and unfortunately, it's under terrible circumstances. There's been a hostile takeover of the podcast, and I've been forced and coerced into the direction of how this show is going to go by my new co-hosts. So if you guys do not like how we're doing this from now on, it is all the new guys' fault. And before we introduce them, we're going to start it off with this, all right? You find yourself alone in the duck marsh. Your decoys are set. It's about 15 minutes before shooting light. You have a good scout, and all the cards are ready. A group of hunters walk up to you. All right, take some notes here, guys, real quick. One's a skybuster. One's an overcaller, as in calls too much. The other one has a GoPro attached to his head. And one has a dog that won't listen. Now, your hide will only accommodate four hunters. So somebody's got to go back and sit in the truck. So I'm going to kick it off to Matt. Let's go with you first.
Who am I kicking out?
Yep. Only four hunters can hunt that hole. Who's staying? You got a skybuster, an overcaller, someone with a GoPro attached to his head. And then one that has a dog that won't listen. Who's going back to the truck?
I'm going to have to go with the Skybuster. That's
Skybuster? Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So Matt's answer is the Skybuster. Thomas.
I'm going to go with the Skybuster as well.
Oh, okay. I'm docking 1 point from you for agreeing. Uh-huh. Okay. All right, and then everybody knows your lovable co-host, Alex. Who's going back to the truck?
The overcaller.
The overcaller's going back to the truck? Over the Skybuster, the guy with a GoPro on his head, and then the one that has a dog that won't listen?
Yeah, the GoPro guy sits next to me because he'll get some sweet footage. And I'll just like color it up with some face paint. The guy with the dog that won't listen just gets tied up in the blind. And then I take the Skybuster shells.
Okay, much like the direction of this show so far. Okay. Honestly, guys, you were all wrong. You were all incorrect. The real answer is that hit your plan B. So.
Yeah,
sorry. Trick question.
Yeah.
All right. So I've briefly mentioned all of your first names, some of you your second name. Now what we're going to do is we're going to go round robin style, and we're going to have Alex is going to go first. Introduce one of the new co-hosts.
Oh man, goes first. Way to put me on the spot, Ben. Anyways, well, I will introduce you to. Let's see. Man, now I got to get all the names right. Skip me. Come back.
Okay. All right. Matt Zivlager. Matt can't read your last name.
Yeah, you nailed that.
Yep. Thank you. No, Matt Zivlonik, High Prairie Sportsman. Go ahead. Introduce Thomas for us.
And last but not least is Thomas Hoke from Virginia Outdoors Unlimited.
That's it? That's all you got? There's nothing about... You don't want to describe who he is as a person, as a anything?
Well, we don't want to give away everything in the first episode here, Ben. You want to leave a little mystique, you know?
You know, as like... This didn't go as I thought it was going to. I'll say that.
Yeah, how's your no plan going, Ben?
No, it's not. There's no plan. The plan was that there would be no plan. All right.
There's about to be a hot right. takeover of the introductions.
Yeah, apparently. All right, Thomas, tell us a little bit about yourself. Thomas Hoke, Virginia Outdoors Unlimited. The golden child, and probably the most promised, and probably the only one worth saving in the YouTuber realm of my friends.
My name is Thomas, as they've already introduced me. I am 19 years old. I'm from Richmond, Virginia. I am a full-time college student during 9 months of the year. Oh, and
wait. Right now you're a full-time college student?
Well, during typical times, not right at the moment.
So what have you been doing? What have you been doing since this whole semester has been shot?
So basically up until early May, I had regular online classes. Those were a huge drag. Really did not enjoy those. And right now I'm actually lucky enough to be doing research with a professor from my university through a university run research program. And we're doing a really, really cool waterfowl study. So I'm actually really enjoying my month of June. And then July and August, I got pretty much an open schedule, and then back to school in September.
What are you guys studying, or can you not say?
My degree is environmental science. We're studying basically population dynamics of the mid-Atlantic waterfowl population.
Oh.
Yeah.
So, in like, without using big words...
Basically, we took a public data set, and then we looked at the past 70 years, and we're looking if certain populations of birds have been increasing, decreasing, or like neither during that time period.
Okay. And so what has been like the hot button tip, you know, like what have you have to say about, you know, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service not being able to do a population survey this year? Has that been talked about?
It hasn't been discussed. I think it'll be discussed as we flesh out our paper more. I think it's probably going to be a topic that comes up. But right now, we're kind of in the initial data stage right now. So we're really just grinding in Excel. That's what most of my work has been for the past couple weeks.
All right. Sounds good. Matt Zivlonik, what have you been up to, man?
Just working. I never, you know, I didn't get a break. I've been essential. So been working from home. It's kind of been different. Other than that, doing a little bit of fishing, not too much though, because the wind never dies out here.
All right. Alex?
Yes, sir.
Have you been paying attention? Do you know what we're doing right now?
Yes, introductions. Absolutely have been paying attention. Well, I have been up to, I've made some improvements to my chop shop. In the meantime,
let's not talk about Chop Shop yet.
I know. I'm just filling in what I've been doing.
The legal disclaimer hasn't come through yet. So.
Right. Well, you know, the paperwork's in the works. I've been getting packed up, getting ready to relocate over to Thomas's area there in Northern Virginia. Thinking about like really doing a lot of digital scouting as much as I can, getting caught up on the laws up there, just getting familiar with the new territory and riding out my last few days here in South Texas before I hit the road in the first week of July. So looking forward to some content building.
Awesome. Awesome. So, all right, what's the consensus, guys, right now? How many days till you guys can hunt?
Well, September teal season for me. So 15 September.
So it's like 97 days.
Yeah, I got to open my counter up. But yeah, something like that.
Yeah, we're set.
Same for you, Thomas.
Yeah, 80. Well, we can hunt geese here in Virginia. So 85 days until we can hunt September geese. And then I don't even really count teal season. We have under 1,000 teal shot each year in Virginia in teal season. So first day we can actually shoot ducks is 123 days, October 9th.
Wow, that makes me so sad to hear about the teal. God. Man.
You're in a decent area for teal. You have a decent opportunity to see some teal if you hunt a few days, but they are really, really scarce in Virginia. Blue wings.
All right, Matt, how many days till we can hunt?
We start September 5th here for teal. So it's around that 90-day period.
I think it's, 91 is what I had. You guys aren't doing a very good job. I gave you all this study work, and you're messing it all up.
Hey, I think I had my numbers right on the head.
Thomas, you are excluded from that last comment.
So this is really about me and my ability to count days. Fine. I'm going to crack another beer and start counting.
Okay, good. All right. Anybody get on any turkeys? I know this is a sore topic on the Foul Front Waterfowl podcast, but anybody get on any turkeys? Oh, and by the way, thanks for asking me, guys, what I've been up to.
Ben, I appreciate what have that. You been up to?
That's what you get from... let's take a minute here to hear Ben's story.
Yeah,
I think
is the
part of the listener. The listeners are really going to be wanting to hear this story from you, aren't they?
Yeah. Why?
Where the foul?
Why hasn't there been a Foul Front episode since February, Ben?
Who?
Oh, geez. I mean, I can't tell you. It's not for a lack of people harassing me on Facebook Messenger.
They did it enough.
I started blocking people. No, I'm just kidding. I didn't block any of you, but I did ignore some of you pretty hard. Why has there not been an episode? Well, one, I was moving. I moved. I think the last time I was in my sister-in-law and brother-in-law's basement.
Bathroom. So I think bathroom recording.
Yeah, perhaps. No, it was my truck. I was recording in my truck and it was freezing. Just been moving. I started a new job. Things have been, I've been trying to get onboarded there and really been hitting the ground running while I'm over there. So working over at Sovereign Sportsman Solutions and AKA and Powderhook and that as well. So got a new job and just been trying to learn the ropes, get my feet under me. And you guys are all terrible at planning. That's why we haven't done an episode.
Yeah, this is where you're supposed to pawn it off on your trusty co-host for just letting you down for months while you were busy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's right. I said, hey guys, here's the link and the login. Go ahead, start making some episodes and crickets. Right.
Yeah.
I said, I trust you with the direction of the content, and thank God that didn't happen, honestly. You guys are all really lucky that – not you guys, not the co-hosts, the listeners. So, But – all right. You guys have been doing some non-waterfowl stuff over the last couple months. I want to start it off hopefully in brevity. Alex, you shot a species that none of us have probably – no, none of us have probably got to hunt. You want to talk about that a little bit?
So you're talking about my Rios this year?
No. I'm talking about your Axis deer.
Oh, well, jeez, yeah. I got an Axis deer this year. That was my last Texas – hill country bucket list item. And I got really fortunate from the standpoint of like a good network of hunters hooked me up with some landowners in the hill country that had free ranging herds, which for
it wasn't high fence.
No, these were free range. Yeah, it was a free range trophy buck, like 31 inches is what he measured out at. And it was kind of interesting. It was through a friend of mine who I duck hunted with this year a lot, and he put me in touch with a guy that coordinates with ranch owners. And they basically, when the herds cross their land, they call you and you can come in and hunt that piece of property. And so I went out and with the landowner did a spot and stock on this deer, ended up crawling about 350 yards on my hands and knees and picked cactus thorns out of my elbows for better part of a week, but closed the distance, put a 108 yard shot on him with my 308 and pretty much dropped him in about 15 yards. So, I was super proud of getting, I was super happy to get the opportunity and happy to see the network of hunters came through for me on it. And I was really happy that the trophy axis that I got out of Texas was a free ranging herd on a spot and stock hunt. It felt really authentic, and the camaraderie of the hunt was great, and just all around a really awesome experience. So a memory that I'll definitely keep for the rest of my hunting and outdoors life, which will be all of it. So,
Matt, Thomas, you have any comments about that?
Sounds awesome. It's one of species I've always wanted to chase. I think they look absolutely awesome. So really jealous of that.
Now, you said 31 inches. Is that a big axis deer?
So anything over 30 inches is considered a trophy axis deer in Texas. And if you look on, like if you go and type in like axis deer hunt in Google, you'll see a lot of operations like ranch operations, high fence operations, which I mean, honestly, like I'm not going to open the can of worms on that, because when they say high fence, they've usually got like 2,000 or 3,000 acres fenced, it's a lot of space. But they charge a pretty obscene amount of money to get an opportunity at a 30 plus inch deer out here. And so like to get one that's on a free range, like a free ranging herd, low fence, that's a pretty, pretty cool thing to, like I said, get the chance to do. So, yeah, and that's like from the base of the head to the tip of the horn. Like that's how much wall space I'm going to need vertically to put them up on the, above the fireplace.
Gotcha. All right. How many turkeys we got down? Let's start with Matt.
I got two this year, both Merriam's and both with my 28 gauge.
Oh, nice. And were you in a blind or were you?
Yeah, I'd stack. No, I do the pop up blind. I like that.
All right, good. Man of many words. Thomas, did you get a turkey this year?
I got a turkey, and I also called in my first ever turkey for a buddy to shoot. So those were two really awesome experiences. That bird I called in, we had him come right up to a decoy, fan out. My buddy missed him first shot, and then got kind of lucky, hit him on the second shot. I'm not sure if that was luck or skill, and then the bird I killed, we were literally finished up a morning sit, walking down a road, see some hens out in the field, like 100 yards to our right. And we kind of just both stopped. It was me and my father, and stand there for about 2 minutes. And this bird gobbles right on the other side of the hedgerow, like 30 yards away. We had never seen him, never even knew he was there. Made one call. He came straight through the hedgerow and shot him. So two very quick, but very fun hunts for me this spring.
Nice. Nice. Alex?
Yeah, got two birds this year. One was my wife's first that I called in, and it was awesome because we were sitting in a pop-up blind, and it was textbook. Like, what was interesting about my turkey hunts this year is I killed both my birds after 12 o'clock in the afternoon this year that came screaming into calls. So I did a lot of long day sits. So we got two down, and then I missed two birds this year. So one of them I had a light strike on my gun. The shell, like, it hit the primer and it didn't go off, and the turkey heard the click, and that was the end of that. And then another one I just straight up missed by 410, so just was what it was. But I had a great season, can't complain.
How far were you away when you missed with your 410?
It was right about 35 yards.
Yeah, that's
It was. I ranged it out. So I was. It was the first time I took my 410 out, and I arranged it, and I basically knew my yardage markers, and I was happy about it. It was at least a clean miss. You know, I didn't see any feathers come off the bird. Like, I know that I didn't injure it or anything like that. So that was the first time I ever tried to take a shot at a turkey with the 410, and I think I took away a few lessons learned on it. Like, if you're gonna, you know, I'm sure the gun is more than capable at that range, and it was just me. But it's kind of more like, it's more like rifle shooting, like more so than a 12 gauge or a 16. I would say, like a 12 gauge, that pattern opens up pretty wide at a distance, but those things stay pretty tight for pretty the whole deal. So need a little bit more practice on it. So, but just happy I didn't wound the bird.
Yeah, yeah. I got a bird down. I think it was May 1st, I believe. I heard him in that same spot. Actually, we got me and my buddy Alec. We were out during bow season, and we were sitting in this blind that was kind of facing towards the road on private permission that we had, and we got shot at from the road from a guy with a rifle. He was shooting into our decoys. So that ended that hunt. And then, but we knew where they were gobbling from. So I went there like 2 weeks later, went right underneath the tree, had to back out because I realized there were six birds in the tree above me. So I had to reposition. Yeah. And then I just sat real still about 30 yards away with my little Jake decoy out there and made, I think, one peep right before they, as they were starting to act up there at shooting light, and they came down, and the bird that I got, he had pretty much hit the ground with his fan up, and he was hollering, and he had maybe been on the ground for a minute and a half before I was walking back to the truck. So that was nice finally to get back on the board. And then I won't talk about my trip that I went out to Western Nebraska, because I'm actually going to have those guys on. We're going to do a little play-by-play on that, because we had a pretty sweet day. I had to hide out in like a shed out on this public property during a rainstorm. It's pretty cool. But
I did my, just side note, I did my first like stalking the turkey, like with a Jake fan, like creep up on him. And so I had three birds gobbling under some sage bushes, and I got within about 20 yards of them in some pretty thick cover until I got visibility on them, and they were three Jakes. So I just kind of sat and watched them. But it was kind of cool. It was the first time I'd ever like had to creep up on turkeys before using like a fan. I knew that they could see me through the bushes, but I really couldn't see their beard until I got close. So that was a cool experience this season. Just that didn't even result in a shot, but it was fun still.
All right. I got a question for Matt. I guess, and Thomas too. What motivates somebody to put a GoPro on their head and record all their hunts, and kind of what goes, you know, what motivates you to do that?
Well, I guess I'll start off here. So the main thing is, you know, just for anybody that wants to do it, is it's a great way to go back and look at your hunts. Like right now, you know, when duck depression's really hitting, you can go back and just relive that hunt and remember details that you might, you might have forgotten. So you're capturing memories. Another reason that I do it is, you know, I want to get more people interested in the outdoors, specifically hunting. And it's a great way to show the ups and downs and what actual real duck hunting and just real hunting in general is like. So those are my two reasons for it.
I'd say mine are very close to the same, definitely along the same lines, like to get people into waterfowl hunting. I feel like these type of videos that we put together offer a pretty unique and true representation of waterfowl hunting for the most part. And then it's really, like Matt said, a great way to remember memories. The way I try to edit my videos is like a video log. So instead of, you know, some people have a notebook, some people have a spreadsheet, they keep different stuff in about duck hunting so that you can go back and look. For me, it's kind of my videos. 10, 15 years from now, I'll still have these to be able to go back and remember this hunt that I probably...
Sorry, that is my severe thunderstorm warning thing.
That was annoying.
Yeah, it is. It just issued a...
having some well, weather?
To the east of me right now, like central Nebraska is getting smoked by tornadoes, I guess. Like around Broken Bow.
Yeah, I think... Yeah, my grandparents live in Broken
Bow. Yeah, and then to the west, well, I guess we're your thunderstorm watch right now, so... It's, I mean, right now it's clear and little wind, but that's about it.
I think my sprinklers just kicked on. Might have to. Huh. All right. What were we talking? Oh, yeah. What's the best waterfowl YouTube channel out there?
Just going to put it on blast.
The best.
The Flyways Collective. Yeah.
Yep, that's right. My answer too.
No, one. You have to choose one.
Well, one I'll show. Say another inspiration for me putting the GoPro on my head, as you said. One thing I will say about the GoPro on your head is it's not comfortable. Anybody who's worn a GoPro on their head for about 4 hours during a duck hunt know the relief of when you take that thing off. But for me, I started... Like right when I was getting into waterfowl hunting was when Elliot from Freelance Duck Hunting was posting his first video. So for me, and I think this is emblematic of a lot of the younger waterfowl generation, I learned a lot of what I learned in the first year of waterfowling through watching YouTube videos. So a lot of what I really contribute to kind of my love of waterfowl came from Freelance Duck Hunting and Josh from Outdoor Limits. They were the first two to really get on the YouTube scene.
Now, Matt, don't ruin this. I'm trying to make sure we go this whole show without mentioning the big bearded man. Okay. So don't mention
the sister. Don't podcast. Mention him.
Okay.
All right.
Yep. Nope. We're not. Yep. We're not mentioning
him. All right. We'll just ignore him then. I don't know. I mean, there's so many good YouTube channels out there and it, I mean, the great thing about them is they all offer like a different perspective and different areas to hunt. Like Thomas said, you know, Elliot and Josh down there in Kansas, they've got some really great Kansas hunts. There's one in Arkansas I'm pretty fond of. You know, Thomas shooting his black ducks over there in Virginia is really great too. And then Titus over there in California hunting the refuges. It's just cool to see the differences in waterfowl hunting across the country and kind of the, you know, how people decoy birds and where they have to take them and the pressure and just everything that goes into it. I just find that really interesting.
Now I feel kind of bad. We can mention him. No, you know what? I don't think we should mention him. I think it almost maybe adds to the allure a little bit if nobody knows what we're talking about. It's like negative press.
Oh.
No? I'll say it's like, it's duck gun something is if you want to find it. So, all right, let's pivot a little bit out of, is it all good? Is it all good that everybody's just recording their hunts or is there some bad to it too? Is there any negative? Like I feel like I see more and more people doing it. Is that true or is that not true?
There is definitely negative.
Yeah, there's definitely more people filming it. Now, if they're posting it up on like YouTube or online, you know, I see a lot of new channels pop up and they kind of tend to burn out because I think a lot of people don't realize just how much work goes into making the actual videos. Like it takes a lot of work. Like we're talking hours for just one video. So, you know, that's one thing. You know, so I've had people message me, I'm sure Thomas probably has too, about like, are you worried about burning spots out? Well, not really, because if you don't know where we hunt and if you can hide like visible landmarks and other stuff like that, you're probably not going to find it. Like the only people that are going to know about that spot are people that have been there or like very good internet detectives, which there are some out there, you know, more seems like more on the fishing side than even hunting. But Thomas is a great internet detective. I can attest to that personally. What is going on over there?
Yeah. Alex, are you there?
Yeah. What's up?
Quit dicking around with your microphone.
I'm not doing anything with my microphone. Let me have a microphone.
Oh, oh great.
That thing got packed in the move.
All right. So you talked a little bit about some of the negatives, especially that, you know, Thomas is a great internet scouter.
Yeah.
And I've put a lot of time and effort into being a good internet scouter. You know, that's not so I can steal people's spots. There's other reasons to be good at that. But I'll say, you know, if people are saying they're able to find your spots from YouTube videos, they are lying. Because if Matt said, like Matt said, if you don't have a landmark in it or, you know, something else, you're not going to be able to pick out a spot.
So I want to ask you this, Matt. You posted a turkey video the other day. Was it actually true that your camera malfunctioned and we saw everything but the actual shot, or were you just trying to, like, you know, be one of those conservation guys? It's like, oh,
no,
it's not
the camera actually did malfunction, because I actually showed Thomas and the bearded guy from Indiana on our Discord chat that night when I got back. I was like, do you guys have any clue how I can record, you know, or recover this file? Like, the file corrupted on me for some reason. And of all the times for it to happen, it was during the shot. So I finally found a program, and that's what I got. I mean, you can see that it's not the best. It kind of like skips, and the audio is trash on it. I had to cut the audio out of it completely, but no, that wasn't planned.
Okay. So no. You are all about the
no,
kill.
No, I am not a kill dependent hunter, as Elliot would say. That's what he goes into a lot of detail about that. But no, I'm in it for the experience and putting some food on the table.
Okay, so one of the main things that I wanted to get at with this episode in particular, especially with regarding everything that's kind of going on in the country right now, you know, we got COVID, and then we've got the recent, you know, kind of the protests and some of the riots with the George Floyd murder, and there's just a bunch of polarity, I think, with everybody, you know, left and right and all this other stuff. And so what I wanted to do is I wanted to get your guys' take on how we can make the outdoors more inviting for everyone. You know, whether it be the color of your skin, the party that you affiliate with, whether or not, you know, you want to just have like locally sourced food, or if you're just interested in hunting, like, what are some of your guys' ways that you are trying to make the outdoors more inviting? Let's start with,
you know, I think we kind of touched on it, you know, just for a minute there about like our YouTube videos. I mean, that was one of the inspirations for me starting my own personally. It was just to get more people out there. You know, I do stuff on Facebook and other social media platforms too, trying to do that. But honestly, that's, you know, you've got to go to where the people that don't hunt are, or people that might be interested in, you know, that's online. The youth, the young generations, the college kids, high schoolers, the ones coming up, because they're going to keep this passion, this tradition of ours alive.
Alex, do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, I guess like what I try to invite people into the outdoors and like get them out here for it is kind of like as a break in a way from some of the polarity. You know, I think that's one of the best parts about going hunting, and one of the parts that I really liked about guiding is, you know, people show up and they want to go hunt, or like if you got a coworker or something that wants to go hunt, it's really an opportunity to kind of to share a resource. That doesn't have to get polar, you know, like you could sit there in a duck blind, or you could sit out in a turkey field, or sit in a deer stand, or, you know, whatever, you can sit in a boat when you're fishing, and you can just kind of look and appreciate nature and share that with somebody. And you know, you can almost see some switches turn for it. And I've had some friends that I've been able to bring in the outdoors that never really experienced that before. And it kind of changes their thought process on it. And you know, one of the big things for me is I try right up front to not even make it remotely issue based in some respects. You know, it's easy. I think the conservation is one thing where people hear conservation, but that also could be read totally differently. You know, depending on who you talk to about it, they hear conservation and they hear, you know, they automatically thinking of a certain party affiliation, or they start stereotyping to a certain extent. But I think if you just kind of let that conversation come as people grow to appreciate the outdoors, it becomes a much more like innate understanding of it, and gets people interested without ever having to cross that boundary. And so I guess that's kind of my thought on how I introduce people to the outdoors, and you know, the approach I take to it, whether that be friends, family, clients, you know, it's really just about that shared experience in that moment and then setting it up for other ones.
I think Alex hit the nail on the head. I don't have a ton to add to this. I will say, I think it's really about kind of putting the resources in the right areas. Some people just aren't going to like the outdoors. That's just how it is. And, you know, it's not for everybody, but I think we just need to do a better job of identifying, you know, the youth groups who are interested in the outdoors, kind of intrinsically interested in the outdoors, and then bridging that gap between hunting and fishing and other kind of outdoor activities like we like to do, and maybe some less resource oriented outdoor activities.
Yeah, that's kind of like the crap deal of it, right? Is as much as we want to say like, hey, the outdoors is, you know, for everyone. There are people out there, a lot of different people, and I'm not even talking about black people. I'm not even talking about, city folk or anything like that. It just doesn't seem that accessible when you're on the outside looking in. It's these big barriers that we have, you know, going into it. But I mean, I don't want to speak as to what everybody's barriers are, because I'm putting a lot of time into trying to understand those barriers. But it's so personal. I mean, whether or not you don't have somebody there, you don't feel comfortable in the outdoors or comfortable around guns or comfortable even in the space of kind of especially in the waterfowl hunting world. I think we can really get at each other's throats sometimes, you know?
You talk about the barriers, and you and I have discussed this stuff in the past too, you know, barriers to entry and ways around them. And, you know, I think that, so I'll take Texas as a really good example, and I'll use Texas as an example for, barriers to a certain extent. So like the duck hunting here, there's no walk-in, you know, like why does Alex run a chop shop? It's because I need bows. You know, that is a barrier, you know, like that is something that is required to get into the sport or have a close friend that does. And, you know, and you can look at all the issues that surround the why that is. Some of them are really good. You know, the prime place I hunted, it would be considered what I would think is sportsman's dream. It is an entire lake that is surrounded by a WMA, and there's no houses or anything around it. But that creates, you know, there's very limited access to it, which keeps it in very good shape. But that in and of itself, that, you know, so you could almost look at it that way. It's like, well, that conservation created a barrier. Like there's no entry to it. You know, it's hard to introduce someone there. Well, on the flip side of that, you could go look down on the coast, and there you have a totally different problem where the public access is restricted because of private ownership. And so there's both sides of that coin here when you start talking about like, how does someone get into the outdoors in a place like this? And I've talked about it with my family here too. I was like, I've enjoyed Texas because I have the resources to enjoy the public things here. But if I didn't have those resources, I would have a very different problem set, and I'd have to seek other ways around it. And that would require me being extremely motivated to do it, which for someone that has never done the sport before, that motivation is probably not there. Which I think it's incumbent on us now as ambassadors of the outdoors and the sports to recognize our local restraints and provide a form of access to people that are curious, you know, and that's what it is. It's curiosity. It's somebody around you that says, hey, I've never tried it, but I'd like to. Like that's the opportunity to create another ambassador that you have to kind of do yourself, because that you have to take the initiative on it. You know, I kind of put the responsibility for that on us as outdoorsmen that are passionate about it.
You know, when you talk about like the curiosity thing, I would say a good number of the people that I have invited out that were like successful endeavors, I don't even know if they were curious. They just heard me and someone else talking about her. They saw a picture or something. They were like, oh, what's that? You know? And I was like, hey, you want to go? And I was just very forward about it. And I was like, not really. I was like, it's really fun, dude. X, Y, Z, tell them this, tell them that. And they're like, all right. Like that initial like invite going out and being like, oh dude, do you want to go? Or, hey, do you want to go? Like, I think that's like the step one is going out there and literally inviting people, because I think that can be quite an intimidating ask.
Well, and it's like Thomas, you're talking about the YouTube, you know, why do we do the YouTube channels? Like what is, you know, why would somebody wear the GoPro on their head? Right. It's a form of that ambassadorship. It's a form of communication and exposing people to an experience that they may have an interest in doing. And that's why, like, you know, I look at us as, you know, us, like I said, outdoorsmen in general, outdoors women, like people that enjoy the space, as being those ambassadors and policing ourselves with it too. You know, like when you see that GoPro video or you see that YouTube video that could put things in a bad light or squash that curiosity, you know, because that's what I think you got to get first, right? You have to get someone to say, hey, I think that would be cool, or I would like to try that, but I don't know how. Literally about anything even beyond waterfowl hunting. And then bringing them along, because that's an interested party now that wants to learn. And you can't build that kind of enthusiasm. You can't generate that many other ways than that kind of innate, hey, I'd like to give it a shot. And then us taking advantage of it.
Matt, I want to play a little game here, a little devil's advocate game. I'm going to make you be the devil's advocate. Okay, I'm gonna make a statement, and then I'm gonna give you just a, if you need me to give you some time to come up with like an argument against it, or you know, what's some negative rhetoric around it would be, let me know and we'll come back to you. Okay. All right. There is no place, and this is the wrong podcast for you to listen to. And there's no place in the outdoors if you're somebody that says, oh, there's too many hunters in my marsh already. All the statistics and all the research is just jaded to make more money, and there's plenty of hunters as it is right now. We don't need any more hunters.
Okay, so what do you want me to agree? I guess I.
Oh wait, maybe I reframe that. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Okay, so let me reframe this question. How about this? There's too many hunters. You know what I mean? There's too many hunters out there. Gosh, I'm really suckering this one up.
Yeah. So here's
no. Hold on. Stop.
This no plan thing is going great.
Here's what it is. Thank you. I'm really good at this. All right. Let me reframe it. So what I'm saying is, so what is somebody saying? Like, why would they say that? Like, why is that so correct?
Why do they have that?
You're going to be that guy.
You're asking. Well, I.
Yeah. Like, who's the guy that
boils
saying
down
that?
To people hunting crowded WMAs, crowded public lands that have seen an uptick through either YouTube or, you know, TV shows such as Duck Dynasty. We know there was a little bit of a rush, you know, a renewed interest in waterfowl hunting because of that. So I think that's probably where that perception comes from, is, you know, they roll up to the marsh that they've hunted for years, and I don't want to, you know, stereotype anything or anything like that, but it seems to be kind of the older generation that mostly says that, because they probably hunted that area for years and they might have seen, you know, maybe one or two other hunting parties out there, and all of a sudden all these kids that are new to the sport, they're interested, but they don't really know exactly what they're doing. So they're sky busting or they're overcalling or doing whatever, and that's, you know, that's rubbing them the wrong way. I would guess that is where the perception would come from.
Nail on the head.
Oh, yeah. Hi, Thomas. Nice to have you back. Sorry.
I think that was perfectly.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's, I think it's the people have that entrenched view of like what their nirvana is, and that's being disturbed now. It upsets me. Like, I'm not like, when I go home and fish my home river for, you know, and I see a whole bunch of people on it fishing now, I'm kind of like, what the hell? Cause I fished this, you know, for 30 years. And I remember when there was nobody there, you know, but honestly, what I've learned is like, I don't care unless I see abuse, you know, or I see it getting trashed. You know, then I start to care a little bit more, but it took a little while for me to get past that as somebody that's gone through that experience personally, you know?
Yeah. I think it's kind of a small price to pay. And like, if you're still picking the low hanging fruit areas as you progress, I mean,
you know, it's funny. You talk about you see people coming to your marsh. You know, I experienced a microcosm of that this season where the area where I was hunting got a lot of attention, and it started bringing in a lot of people from out of town. It started crowding spots. I had an incident this past season. I don't think we ever discussed it on a podcast where a friend of mine, he had to go to his plan B, and he was going to come hunt with me. And I was actually a little bit late to the spot, and I got someone jumped to it, and he ended up going through their decoys, and it led to this whole like debacle that actually devolved into social media too. Like, it went into the duck hunting groups, and it was really interesting. And so my answer to that was I told my buddies, I was like, well, you know, I've got the resources and the tools now. Like, I'm just going to go somewhere different. I'm going to go further, you know, and adjust my tactics and leave some of these spots that, yeah, I've had a good time in, and they're usually very productive, but I have an ability to go somewhere different, you know? And I think, once again, that's a responsibility of experienced hunters. If we want to have that experience, like, we probably have tools that the newer folks don't have to do that. And yeah, you know, it's probably a communication thing, but once again, I put a lot of responsibility and onus on those of us that are in it and committed.
Here's an interesting question that I'd like to ask all of you. And I'll know, we'll all kind of get a feel for who you are if you don't answer it. What's the worst thing that you've done to somebody in the marsh, like to your fellow sportsmen?
Oh, man.
You want me to start?
Yeah,
you want me to start?
Go for it.
Yeah.
This is what this is one I still feel like pretty bad about. There was like this spot, and this group had kind of been like getting pretty close to me the last like week or so. And so I was like, you know what? Like, they've been just getting closer and closer, and it's been kind of messing the hunt up. So I hung a headlamp off of a tree on my way in. And then went and got it like 5 minutes before shooting light. And I still feel pretty bad about that. Like, essentially I created like a 700 yard buffer. You know what I mean? And the space, the situation probably should have warranted me, just cause it was just me out there by myself. So I don't even know why I did it. It's not like I had a new hunter with me or anything like that. I guess it was just a little bit being a little bit selfish, and kind of proposing my own, like, oh, you need to be 500-600 yards away from somebody on this public space. And, I mean, karma on me, they had a great shoot that day and I didn't. So, but that's the worst, I think the worst thing I've done to somebody out in the field.
Oh man, I'm trying to think of like, I don't know. Like, when I get fed up with a crowd, or like when things start getting crowded, like, my reaction is just to go somewhere different. You know, like, I'll just find another space, I suppose.
So you're saying you're without sin on public lands?
No. I'm trying to think of like a time where I'll say it's been convenient for me because I've had it. Like, I've had the luxury of being able to do it. Yeah, so yeah. It's like, if I did not have that luxury, I'll tell you, I've had some thoughts of things that I would do. Like, I don't know.
How about this, Alex? You think of the worst thing that you've done. We'll circle back to you.
Okay. No, I'm racking my brain on it. It may not be duck hunting. I think I've done some pretty bad things fishing.
Okay. We'll accept a fishing story. All right. Thomas, Matt.
I yelled at a guy once. Well, he was shooting.
What was
before
he doing?
It was about 15 or 10 minutes before shooting light, and he had been a 10 gauge, and he was just letting her rip. You know, we had birds in our decoys, and we're waiting those 10 minutes or whatever, and then all of a sudden, boom, boom, boom,
And another about 5 minutes before shooting light, again, another volley, boom, boom, boom. I'm like, I had it after that second round. I was like, it's not shooting light. You need to, you know. And then he didn't shoot much after that. So that'd probably be.
So I take it, like, sounds like you were just, you know, policing up a fellow sportsman. But I take it, since that came to your mind, maybe the words you didn't use were very
No, I just yelled nice. Very aggressively, I would say.
Oh. Okay. Thomas, what about you, man?
For me, it would probably be last year. I just accidentally set up on some guy and his kid like 100 yards behind them. And I just didn't know they were there, had no idea. And it kind of ruined both of our hunts. I think he would have probably had a decent hunt if I wasn't there. I think I would have had a banger if he wasn't there. So I think, you know, that just, it was an honest mistake, but I still felt bad about it. But my number one rule out here on public lands is to avoid people. So I have very, very limited run-ins.
All right. All right, Alex, have you decided what's the worst thing you've done?
I've cut lines before fishing. You know, as far as like if people have like gotten upset, like if they've set trot lines or things like that that are not, you know, that are obstructing areas and things like that, I've cut and pulled those out of the water, which, you know, you feel bad about because that's somebody's like put that out. But I also like I removed the ones that I considered to be like obstructing a public way. As far as waterfowl hunting, I have set up close to people that have, So I had this one morning where I was hunting with a group of people, and they showed up late, like they were obscenely late, like an hour from late. And so that morning that we had some people that like were extremely rude to one of our groups. Like I set up about 200 yards to him, and it kind of like what Thomas said, it screwed up both of our hunts in that one. But at the time, I think I felt justified because that guy was super. He was super rude to us, but I should have probably just taken the high road and canned the hunt for that morning when it was late already instead of trying to push it and disturb other people's stuff. So I guess that morning I was that guy that was going out, you know, 10 minutes before shooting light in my boat trying to get to a spot and set up 100 yards for somebody that I perceived as to be a not-so-friendly person, which, yeah, I feel pretty bad about that now that I reflect on it.
All right, good. Now that I've got you all feeling terrible, what do we got to look forward to? What do we got on the YouTube space there, boys?
We have, we've all joined together for the Flyways Collective. We announced that about a year ago now. So that takes up most of our weeks, don't it, Thomas? Seems like we're always on Discord talking about that or coming up with ideas for that.
Yeah, we're in kind of our big second push with that, kind of trying to get it out there. So that's
yeah. Other than that, you know, right now. Just doing some fishing, some tips cool. Videos. We're kind of stockpiling videos for the August Blitz, we like to call her, and yeah, just waiting until dove season and then teal season.
Oh yeah, I didn't even think about doves.
Not the 91
days, so yeah. Yeah. Mm. When's dove season open for us?
Same as teal season. Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
Not in Virginia.
Thomas, you're really upsetting me right now about Virginia.
Well, Virginia opens up September 1st. We actually have very good dove hunting here. So I think you will be pleased with that.
All right. So I'll be... So South Texas, we have white wing season. White wing dove opens the first, but the season proper doesn't open here until the 15th. But it doesn't matter for me this year. But so Thomas, I'm going to be calling you up when I get up there, like where the dove hunting is. So
yeah, definitely. We need to have a phone conversation.
All right, Alex, are we going to be hearing some Chop Shop episodes coming up? And in case any law enforcement has been listening in on this and tallying up, our hunter harassment stories here, and take a note that Alex Wallace is mentioned multiple times, his Chop Shop. Go ahead and explain that, please.
Well, so, you know, I'll probably consult with you guys a little bit on the YouTube thing, because I've been thinking a lot about it since we mentioned it when we were conversing a month or so ago. But yeah, so I've got a new addition to the chop shop. I fixed up some boats, so you know, basically I've made it a hobby to buy, fix up, repair, re-rig duck boats, use them, work out kinks, list it for sale, upgrade. And so my latest acquisition as of about 3 weeks ago is a 2060 Go Devil with a 35 horse surface drive on it, that I got for a pretty good deal. It needed quite a bit of work, so a guy had hit a stump with it pretty hard and actually dented the aluminum in and put hairline cracks in it, which I have never seen, by the way, on any duck boat. I've seen people rip holes in the bottom of the hull, but I've never seen anybody like hit an object so hard that it stress fractured the aluminum. And so, but the guy was selling the boat for a price that could not be beat. And what I did is I took the profits from my sales and I bought an aluminum welder. And I have a fabricator here that's been teaching me how to TIG weld and MIG weld aluminum up to the gauge and thickness of duck boat hulls. And so I repaired the boat, knocked the dent out, put a patch in, consulted with Go Devil. Their customer service was, as usual, on point. They told me the alloys to use. Got that all shored up, tested it out this weekend. And I've got a whole host of customization that I'm going to do to it now to get it ready to get up to Virginia and the Potomac. So I don't know, Thomas, you tell me, but I think a 20-foot boat, 60 inches wide, should be sufficient on that river to get to some big water blinds. So
definitely.
Yeah. So I'm pretty happy about it. You guys saw some pictures I put out where I got my bow fishing rig set up. I've really taken into the welding part to expand my chop shop capabilities, but I'll post some pictures out, and you know, if I could get the right setup here, I might see about talking with you guys about putting some clips together or something to hang on YouTube, which I have zero familiarity with generating content with. But as far as on the podcast, yeah, I look forward to, you know, if you guys want to post questions in the group about boat rigging. I've been doing it for a while now. I've owned boats my whole life. And if I don't know an answer, I'll refer you to the experts that do, because it has built a network for me of people that know the answers, you know, to a lot of hard questions. And it's really made this hobby a lot more enjoyable for me. So, yeah, short clip on the chop shop there.
What about you, Ben? What are you going to be doing here the next couple months?
I am going to just be working, and I'm going to be, one of my neighbors came over and introduced himself to me while I was mowing the lawn the other day. And thankfully enough, it was the right neighbor that came over. He's got a boat and he's really big into fishing. So, ooh. Yeah, I know I'm starting to like my neighborhood. The neighbor right next to me, he's got more guns than I do, which is pretty sweet. My other neighbor, he builds bird houses when he's not, you know, in Arizona. He's an older gentleman. And then, this guy's got a boat. So other than that, just knee deep, and we're rolling out a bunch of these configurable, these challenges that you can get on Powderhook now. So I'm doing that most of the day. So.
The turkey and the waterfowl.
Which ones? Oh yeah, I think we got 10 out there right now. So,
I was gonna say That's the cheapest boat you'll ever own is the one you don't. So yeah, good neighbor.
That's what I'm thinking. So, but no. Other than that, we look forward to. We got a couple episodes lined up here. It's not going to be all of us every single time, but I just wanted to make sure everybody got introduced and off on the wrong foot with the co-hosts, so that they could get a little sense of what's to come. And we'll get better at this. It's always fun when you reformat a show and bring on some new talent. So we look forward to hearing what you guys thought of this episode and what you guys want to hear in the future. So. Any parting shots from anybody?
Once the equipment issues come out, I don't want to do.
Should be August.
Sorry, it's not really a parting shot. It's a parting. Yeah, it's kind of a. the gearhead in me is like spinning right now, which Thomas, you and I will talk a little bit more, but I've been building my big water diver spread and I'm anxious to hear your thoughts. So
definitely. I'd love to get into that.
Yeah. I've invested in some Myers Classic decoys.
Heard good things about those. Very, very good things.
Those things are rock solid. Ben, I know that you have like garbage can decoys and that's like, and they work for you. You know, my thoughts on them. So I've seen like, hey, we got to take care of these decoys. Ben, I feel like you would really get along well with like the diver decoy crowd. Those things are like black and white, big, durable, throw them wherever you want. And they last for 100 years.
I feel like that was a little pejorative there about, trash can decoys. I don't think I've ever self-referenced that. I called them garage sale decoys. I did not call them garbage can decoys.
I have this vision of you like salvaging decoys that people are like tossing out, and you're like, oh no, that thing will, that'll hunt. Like, what are you doing?
That'll float.
Like,
yeah, that'll
float. Exactly. As long as it floats. Yeah. Like, if I get some chewing gum, we'll patch this up. My spread just got bigger. Sorry. You're right. I should have put you into that category. Garage sale.
You know what? When you do come down this fall, I think me and Matt will take you on a real special hunt. We'll take you on a little coot hunt, and well, that's it.
Snipe hunt.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
we have them here.
Well, those are things. That's a thing, man.
I know. I've shot some snipe down here too. So it's just, you know, that was the thing that all the old guys used when you were a kid to like distract you and send you off on an errand that went nowhere.
I've never been on a snipe hunt.
Oh man. No. Maybe it was just the old guys in my corner of the world when I was a kid, so. Anyways, about the special.
It's going to be a coot hunt. I don't know if you missed that with your no microphone, no headphones situation over there, which will also change before the next episode, folks. This will be the lowest quality episode that you have. We are playing to the lowest common denominator.
Nowhere to go but
which
up.
Is Alex at this point. Yeah. So,
well, once I get my computer in, and my microphone set back up, which did I tell you guys I'm living in a shipping container right now? So let's talk about odd places we've recorded. Anyways, separate subject, another day. But yes, Ringer is what the name of the day was today.
Yes. And nothing negative about Ringer, but, all right, let's wrap this up, guys. Matt,
yeah,
Thomas, you got through. Anything for us?
I just want to,
thanks for having us on.
I've got to get a party shot in here. We're coming for you, Duck Gun Podcast. That's I couldn't make it the whole show.
You mentioned it. And also, in case anybody wants to know, the Foul Front and the Duck Gun Podcast have fallen out of sorts. Sad to say, we're no longer friends. We just, it's too much. We don't, we're competing over the same listeners and we just can't continue in a friendly relationship, as you know, the way of the current sportsman, debacle. So.
And Lord knows people can't listen to more than one waterfowl hunting podcast.
It's all,
no,
you can only have one.
Yeah. We're going to do a little giveaway. If you unsubscribe to all the other waterfowl podcasts right now, we will give you a high five and talk negatively about you behind your back. Probably. I don't know. In case anybody missed that. No, you know what? I don't need to. It's good. I was going to talk about how that was all sarcastic, but now I feel, oh man, I did not do a good job. I don't know. I did not do a great job at hosting this episode, but it was fun to get back on the mic after 5 months, and appreciate everybody still being here. In fact, there's probably nobody listening anymore because we've gone on way too long. So, all right. Oh, Thomas, did we skip you? Did you have something you wanted to close out with?
I just wanted to say thanks for having us on, and I look forward to recording more of these episodes.
You know what? I think it's just going to be me and Thomas from now on. Alex, Matt, you guys can go. Yeah.
No. Hey Matt, you want to?
Yeah, I'm gonna take my podcast name with me too.
That's you know what? Yeah, Genesis here is that Matt actually named this podcast.
Yeah, I gave it.
Wow,
to Ben.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah. Sounds like Matt, intellectual property needs to be stolen back.
Yeah, Matt's a great friend, terrible businessman. So
yeah, he's the one that told me about the chop shop. So if I turn this thing around, like, man,
he's, you know, for a guy that's got a pretty difficult last name, he's pretty good at coming up with ones, you know. So
yeah,
all right. Now we've gone too far. I got to hit stop on this guy. All right, everybody, bye. Say bye.
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 Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Foul Front Waterfowl Podcast. Please come join us on our Facebook group, the Foul Front Waterfowl Podcast group, where you can connect with a good group of hunters, because we're all in this together. We need to act like it so that hopefully our great, great grandkids will be hunting ducks over our favorite public lands. We also ask that you go ahead and give us a written review on iTunes and give us 5 stars if you think we deserve it. And we really do want to hear back from you so that we can give you the best possible content. And if you get in on that Facebook group, you can get in there and you can ask questions and you can tell us what you want to hear next, or you can tell us what you don't like. And we'll be sure to tailor things to our listeners. So, all right. Stay safe out there, and we will see you next week.
Join Captain Justin Leake and Meredith McCord for the best fishing action along Panama City Beach. Tune in to Chasing the Sun every Sunday at 9:30 a.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.
Oh, that's awesome!
Don't miss Thursdays with Saltwater Experience, brought to you by Golden Boat Lifts, every Thursday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.